Welcome into Jags AM today. I'm Kainani Stevens here with Brian Sexton and John Osher. The whole band's back together. We're a little over 2 weeks out from the NFL draft, and we're still trying to predict what the Jags are going to do with their first round pick. Let's start out with our big things today, lasting impressions. Around this time of year, there's some makeup pro days, there's top 30 visits. Brian, this is the time of year that draft picks can make their last impression on teams and coaches, and they kind of finalize their big boards around this time of year. Brian, what can kind of swing a vote this time of year when you're meeting with draft picks?
Well, it depends on what the team wants to accomplish, Kai, with their 30 visits, right? You get your top 30 visits, and your board is set by this point. They've come back, and now they're just looking to polish some grades up and see whether a guy is really in front of another guy that perhaps they talked to at the combine, or whether a guy doesn't fit their system, how he performs when he comes in, if they put him on a whiteboard. This is about where a guy fits and within a space of three or four spaces, not dramatic moves up or back. And of course, also, you could be talking about where you might be interested in moving, perhaps in the first or second round, and you might be looking at guys who can give you an impression about, yeah, it's worth moving back. I suspect that was part of the visit with Anton Harrison last year when he came in, making sure that if they move back, they had a guy they were interested in.
Well, yeah, as far as the 30 visits, you're not just talking about 30 first-round picks coming in. You're talking about them going all through some fifth-round, sixth-round guys. It's mainly, Kai, a matter of, look, we like these guys, but you're also thinking about investing in these guys, and it's a chance. There's not as much time one-on-one with these guys at combines, at pro days, at senior bowls, whatever, to really get a great feel for who he is. So this is that last chance to sort of bring a guy in, and if you're not sure about one guy versus the other, if they're close, sometimes you just get a vibe for a guy of, hey, this guy doesn't like football as much as I like, or this guy is just not going to be quite a culture fit. So you're trying to get a lasting impression. It's the last stage of the job interview, Brian.
Well, and I can give you an example. In 1997, the Jaguars brought in a defensive tackle from Cornell named Seth Payne. And they had seen him on tape and they'd interviewed him, but they wanted more time to make sure where he fit. They took him in the fourth round, and they wanted to make sure that this was a guy that they liked. And if he was going to go in the third, did they like him enough to move up into the third and grab him? And that's what they discovered when he was here, was this is a guy they wanted. They thought they knew where he was going to go, but based on his visit and their interviews and the time they spent with Seth, they knew they'd make the move up around if they had to. They wanted him that badly.
Still time to affect some of those decisions on those top 30 visits. Our second big thing today is trade talks. John, we talked a little bit about trades last week, what we thought could go down. Do you have an inkling whether trading up or trading back could be more possible?
Yeah, I've been doing this 30 years, trying to predict a draft day trade. Some people predict it because they get lucky. I'd be surprised if they moved up, but I'm always kind of surprised at a draft day trade because you just don't know beforehand what they're thinking. This might be a year to try to do it because the end of the draft, everybody you talk to deep in the draft, sixth, seventh round, it's one of the not deepest or shallowest, if you will, drafts in a long, long time. So if you can get somebody to trade draft equity, to take your draft equity and move up, go do it this year. But that can often be tough. You got to have a partner.
Well, it's tough to predict, but if you look at the last 2 years, Trent Baalke moved up into the first round 2 years ago to grab Devin Lloyd. And then last year, he strategically kept backing up to the spot where he thought he would get Anton Harrison. So clearly, he's got guys that he's identified, and he wants to be able to maneuver to get the best value. That's really the key word, get value for the pick. If the guy you want is there, you can take him, but you also might be able to move into a position where you grab a couple of other picks. So we'll see what he does. The interesting part is in this draft is from what I hear, there's about 14 or 15 guys that have legitimate first round grades. So if one of those guys starts sliding to a position where Trent thinks I got to go get him, well, then maybe it's worth the draft capital to go up and get him.
Trades are always on the table, so we'll keep an eye on that for sure. Our final big thing today is keeping pace. We don't like to look across the street a lot, but we do have to mention what's been going on in the AFC South, what the Titans have done with free agency, what the Texans did last year, and now in additions in free agency, specifically adding Stephon Diggs recently to the wide receiver core. Brian, there's a lot being made of the other teams in the division. Have the Jags done enough so far?
Well, I think the Jaguars have to focus on themselves and to figure out where their deficiencies are. And we know that they have to get better at corner. It highlights the issue at corner, Stephon Diggs, right? You bring in a wide receiver like that, and all of a sudden you're like, okay. And we know Calvin Ridley is in Tennessee, and so you say, well, we've got to get better at corner. But if the right corner's not there, if you can't move to get the right corner, you can't panic. You can't just go and say, well, we've got to have a corner because of the other receivers that are now in this division. Strategically, you want to build to be able to compete with the teams in your division, so you're going to go looking for corners. But you can't have a knee-jerk, John, and say, well, look, we've got better receivers in the division. We now have to take a corner. There are good pass rushers. There are good players at all positions in this division. You better have a well-rounded team.
Yeah, I'm in the minority on this. I don't ever worry that much about what other teams in the division are doing, because my thought is always, you be the team they have to beat. You know, if you lose to, you know, if you build to beat a team in your division, you beat them twice and beat nobody else, well, you're 2-15. So, look, I'm exaggerating that a little bit, but I do get you. But the corner need, to me, has nothing to do with Stephon Diggs. It's looking at your own roster and realizing you need corners for now and in the future. So, I guess I'm out of step.
No, I don't
as usual.
So. Well, listen, I think you have to ask yourself the question also. Why did the Bills let Stephon Diggs go? People don't, they don't factor that in. They say, well, Stephon Diggs is a great player, and now he's a great player in Houston. But Buffalo's taking a significant cap hit on him. He's a 31-year-old receiver. They're willing to let him go despite the fact that they've got this quarterback that has an obvious rapport with him. So ask yourself the question, why are they willing to let him go? Maybe he's not the same player that we all thought he was. You can't build your team based on that, which is what John was just saying. You've got to focus on, I better be better at corner because I'm not good enough at corner. And don't worry about all the intricacies of what Tennessee, Indianapolis, and Houston do. Just focus on you.
Can't just build your team on paper. You got to play the games as well. So we'll see how things go with the draft and then, of course, next season. Stay with us here. We're going to look into the draft. This week, we're looking at wide receiver prospects that could be headed to Jacksonville. Move the freight. Magellan Transport voted the coolest office space in Jacksonville. You can apply online at www.magellanlogistics.com. Back here in the Hyundai Studios for Jags AM. As we get ready, we're about 2 weeks out from the draft now, so we're still trying to figure things out. We've kind of broke it down a little. John and I went over cornerbacks last week because that's been a popular topic. And as we've heard, this year's wide receiver class is elite. So we're going to go over some of the possible prospects that could be headed to town. Some of these are going to go very high. Yep. We don't have Marvin Harrison Jr. in here because I think that might be a little bit. If we go that route, that's a whole different show we'll do. But let's look at some of the other options that are on the table within the first round. So there's two guys coming out of LSU, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr. John, one of them's gotten mocked to us a little bit that you've seen, I'm sure. And kind of physically, like, these are taller receivers, you know, something that we've seen the team needs a little bit of kind of a jump ball guy. Is either of them the person that would be able to fill that role?
Well, they're both really good. I mean, Nabers, I think, unless you trade up, might be a little bit of a pipe dream. He's, you know, there are people who think it's very, very close between Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. So that'd be a great pick. I don't think they'll be in a position to get him unless they trade up. Everything you hear about Thomas is that not as developed. There are people who think he's being very overlooked, that he might be the guy out of this class to be as good as any of them. You see him mock to the Jaguars. I personally would be very surprised if they went this route in round one only because it's so deep in the draft. To me, it still feels like corner, and then receiver is so deep, Brian, that I think you're going to see teams say, okay, I could get a receiver here, but I can also get it in the second round. Some years, that's sort of folly. This year at this position, I think it's a move that makes sense.
You know, we often fall into the trap of just thinking first round and that only these guys, right? Thomas Adunze, the kid from Washington, Neighbors that you mentioned, and Marvin Harrison, are going to be star performers. But if you look around the league, you find that there are a lot of really good receivers who were taken second, third, fourth round. I would be surprised also if they use this pick at 17 at wide receiver. Now, if there's a guy they love, right? I mean, if the Adunze kid falls somewhere where they feel like they can make a trade up, well, he's really good, so maybe you try to get up there. But the first round is about need and value meeting for you, right? The best available player at a position that you want. And we saw last year as Trent moved to a strategic spot to get the need that they wanted, Anton Harrison. I can't see receiver being the first pick this year.
Now, if it is, it's a very interesting philosophical thing they're doing if it is. If it is, then they're all in on offense, meaning they are going to outscore people, and they are going to be a team that wins games 38-31. I don't think if I'm Ryan Nielsen and that happens, yeah. I go into a little ball because I think they need corner. And to me, this feels like a draft that will be dictated at number 17 more than a lot of drafts I've been around by need, because I think you need corner.
Well, and see, I can make the case for you going all in on offense and getting an offensive lineman for number 16, right? I mean, you've got to be all in to protect your quarterback. Everyone who's watching this, who watched the Jaguars last year, know how often he got hit. And you've got two guys, and I get it, you love Cam Robinson, and you have Walker Lill, and you don't need it this year. But next year you're going to, because both of those guys' contracts expire. And this is a great year for offensive tackle. So I get the idea of corner. I totally get that idea. And I'm 90% of the way with you there, John. But if it's not a corner, and I know people want wide receiver, man, offensive tackle is a tougher position to find than wide receiver. It just is. And you find more receivers who can play in later rounds than offensive tackles that can play in later rounds. And if it's not corner, it better be offensive tackle to me.
Is there a world where one of these receivers is good enough that you trade up for them? Like, is there someone that you see that you're like, that would be worth it to me? Or are all of them kind of, no one's doing it for you?
And better be special. Okay. If you're giving up draft equity to go get them, especially when, now, if Brian Thomas is at 13 and
right,
you decided
like
everybody else is off
jump.
The board, there's always a world because you can fall in love with a guy and you want to go get him. And as I said, if you're giving up fifth round equity to go do it, fifth round equity might not be worth that much this year in this draft. So,
can you define special? What do you need to see from a wide receiver in a rookie season to make it worth going up to get? Because you know as well as anyone, you don't see.
Yeah, I think special means, do you think he's a one for the next? Do you think he's the wide receiver you've never drafted?
Okay.
I don't think you go up three spots, or I wouldn't go up three spots to win week five this year.
Okay.
I'd go up three spots if I thought this guy was going to be on the wall someday.
Listen. We all have people we talk to, people we trust.
I don't. Nobody talks to me.
If one of those three, right, and Harrison and Neighbors aren't going to be there. If Adunze slides, because he's that third guy, if he slides somewhere 10, 11, 12, because there's a run on tackles, there could be a run on corners, right, because that's a premium position as well. If Adunze slides to a position where maybe you have to give up, I don't know, the fourth round pick? Okay, I mean, because the word on him is that he's got all the measurables, all the intangibles. He can be a special guy too. Okay, I mean, you could make the case with that because you're in the final year of Zay Jones' deal. Christian Kirk is making 24 this year and 27 next. I mean, I do get why people would like to see a young receiver, especially a really good young receiver. But it better be one of those three guys because Thomas looks to me like T. Higgins, and I know everyone goes, T. Higgins. Yeah, but are you sure he's T. Higgins? And is T. Higgins special enough to go up and get?
Well, I'll clarify this before we move on. I think they're going to take a wide receiver that they think can play quickly early in the draft.
So
I just don't know
two.
If it's going to be at number 17. Yeah,
okay.
So, I mean, I would be a little surprised if they don't, somewhere in that first group. receivers that people think can play go at least to the end of round three and maybe into round four. I would think somewhere in that group the Jaguars are going to take somebody that they believe will impact immediately. I just kind of wonder, because of the nature of the position this year, if they're going to do it in the first round when the need at corner and offensive line feels so much more than the need at wide receiver in the short term.
But it is all about value, right? I mean, we talk about need, and I do get that. But it is about value. And if there is, if you've got a guy, if you've got a receiver that is graded higher than an offensive tackle on the board at that spot, and you can't move back, well, you take the receiver. You take the best player. You don't massage the need. If they're really close, okay, well, then you have a decision to make. But if one is clearly above the other, you take the better player.
Always the best player on the board. We'll see exactly where that's going to be. I think we're all a little bit still on team cornerback at this point, but it is good to see what the wide receiver options are, because if one of them does slide a little bit, certainly something that I'm sure the front office will consider about going up to get them. Here on Jags AM, stay with us. We will shortly come back with Ozone Mailbag. Jaguars fans, get ready to gear up at Fanatics.com with all the latest styles. Shop now and get today's special offer. Fanatics.com, officially licensed everything.
This broadcast is Ozone friendly.
Ozone. Ozone mailbag. John, that looks just like you.
It does. It does. It's a good looking emoji.
I love that. All right. As always, we consult you for all your sage wisdom as our... Your readers, our fans, write into you every week for Ozone Mailbags. So we're going to go over some of the questions you've been getting this week. We'll start off with Rob from St. Augustine. He says, I don't understand fans' idea that the Jags must draft certain positions because of what another team does. Get real. We talked a little bit about this.
I mean, it goes back to, first of all, it's dangerous. Some team makes a move in free agency, and then you say, okay, I'm going to draft three corners. You're drafting with the idea, Brian, that of building your roster out over a 4 to 5 year period.
Right.
It's why I said earlier when we're talking about wide receivers, I don't want to move up to beat the Chiefs in week four in 2024. I want to move up if I think this guy is a core piece that I believe will be on the wall someday and will be a guy who makes me a competitive franchise for 5 years. So. It just goes back to, I've never thought you build to beat one specific team, because if that team loses, then you got 30 other teams to beat.
Well, and I don't want to be completely dismissive of the idea. I mean, when you're in your division, you do build to compete with those teams, right? I mean, the last couple of years, we've seen Jonathan Taylor and Derrick Henry. Well, the Jaguars have tried to get more stout up front against the run. They've brought in linebackers to be able to play against those players. But you do so in the framework of being able to compete every week and not just against a specific team. If you see great receivers in this division, the Jaguars will have to make sure that they have great defensive backs. So they'll draft where it fits over time to be able to compete. The best example of this going back is in the early days of the Jaguars, they built this original team to compete with the Pittsburgh Steelers, because the Steelers were the class of the old AFC Central. And they knew that if they were ever going to compete for the division title, they had to be able to beat the Steelers. But you didn't do it by drafting one player at one spot and say, all right, we've now matched them. We have a corner to match Stephon Diggs. We have a corner to match Calvin Ridley. You want a corner that can match the best receivers every Sunday. And that means taking a guy because he fits, and it might not be where you think they take it.
I think cornerback was always in the mix, and then when you look at some of those additions, you're like, yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Our second reader, fan, writer in, Jeremy from Gilbert, Arizona. Why isn't it a possibility for the Jags to draft a defensive tackle in round one? A cornerback helps one position in the secondary. A better D-line helps every position in the secondary.
Yeah, philosophically, this is dead on. If it was a defensive tackle draft that looked like the offensive tackle draft or the wide receiver draft or the cornerback draft, then I think this would be being more discussed. It's not a great defensive tackle draft. Byron Murphy
from Texas
could be there. I think also they went out and signed Armstead. So you've got Armstead, Hamilton, Roy Robertson-Harris. I wouldn't mind defensive tackle in round one. Yeah. I'm not, you know, philosophically, this makes sense. I think the reason it's not being discussed are the reasons I just laid out.
Listen, for the same reason that I'm about an offensive tackle, right? Because you've got two players who, after this year, are not under contract. You've got Eric Armstead, who's 31, which isn't ancient, but it isn't young either. And Roy Robertson-Harris, who's on the other side of 30 as well. If the best player on the board is a defensive tackle, well, take him, right? There's two, I think, Byron Murphy and Jerzan Newton, the kid from Illinois, that fit in that range. If and this is really important, if Ryan Nielsen likes both of them, they may both be highly rated guys, but they may not fit what he wants to do. So if they're sitting there and the Jaguars don't take him, it's because they're not the best player on the board at what they're talking about right now. So I'm all with you. That's why I always talk about best available player. You can never go wrong when you take a great football player. And if Byron Murphy or Newton fits, take him.
All comes down to how the board falls, it seems. Our final viewer question for Ozone Mailbag is going to be John from Ponte Vedra Beach. Is the overall roster going into the draft the same, below, or the roster is the same? Sorry, excuse me. Is it better the same or below the roster that ended the season? The offensive and defensive lines certainly appear better, but I do not see much improvement elsewhere.
Yeah, my answer to this when I did it in the text mailbag was, if the offensive and defensive lines are better, you're better.
Yes.
Yep. So have they, quote, improved everywhere? Yeah. I think Durbinay makes him a little better at returner right now. I love Agnew. I think Durbinay right now is probably, you know, in his prime, whereas maybe Jamal wasn't. But that's negligible. And, you know, I think if Armstead and Morse make you better right over the ball on both sides of the line, then you're a lot better.
Yeah.
I think they would have been a lot better if they'd been a little better in both of those spots last year.
Well, I think you're dead on. I think when you make your offensive and defensive lines better, you are by default a better roster than you were at the end of last season. I also want to throw this one out because it's a point that you made, John. If they go back to playing the way that they did in 2022 in the passing game, where they were very efficient because Trevor was able to distribute the ball all over the place, this year it felt like they were trying to force the ball to Calvin Ridley. And people want to make the comparison. Well, Gabe Davis isn't as explosive or fast or as good as Calvin Ridley. Yeah, but can he be what Marvin Jones was right in this offense? And I say, yeah, he's a younger, taller, longer Marvin Jones. And so if he comes in here and gives them a better version of Marvin Jones, then I think the passing game is better. I think this is a better roster. It may not have improved exponentially like some people think it could have, but they were 9-8, right? If you get marginally better and can push the ball into the end zone at the end of the year, well, then you're 10-7 in the playoffs. I mean, they were very close. So I don't know that they needed to get exponentially better in free agency. Exponentially better is where the draft comes in.
Yeah, I think had they been able to convert, I don't know the number, 8 more third and ones, that could have been the difference in being 11-6 or 12-5 for this team.
Sure.
I mean, it sounds like a lot, but I think you could easily go back and find games where they couldn't quite convert a third and one or didn't have confidence in that. To me, that tilted the whole season.
I just feel like they made good decisions in free agency to improve the roster. Really, they fit within the cap, right? With knowing that they had a big chunk of money tied up in Cam Robinson and a big chunk that they didn't want to renegotiate, and the franchise tag on Josh Allen, and they were able to make some moves that fit and made this roster better. So I kind of like what they did. I do like what they did.
The free agency additions to their needs were definitely crucial, but now the draft, you gotta back up, you gotta develop, and you have to get that talent. So then in the next couple of years, they're where they need to be as this division is getting a lot better all around them. Stay with us here on JagZam. We'll be right back as we tell you what's going on before the draft. Whether you need air, electric, or plumbing service, Donovan is always a good call. We've been trusted by our customers for almost 40 years, so trust us to deliver fast, reliable service to your home. Back, finishing things up here on Jags AM, and we're just a little over 2 weeks away from the draft. We're going to be talking about it much, much more over the next 2 weeks, probably until very beginning of the draft, and then we'll all be wrong about what we predicted. But it's always fun to kind of try to project what they're going to do. Brian, you're headed to Detroit.
I am. You know, I've been on the road for the draft since they moved it out of New York. So Chicago, Philadelphia, Dallas, Nashville, Cleveland, Kansas City. Yeah, the Cleveland one wasn't all that great. But all these cities embrace it, and they put on a festival. So I'm expecting Detroit to put their best foot forward. It certainly helps that their football team has risen to a contender in the NFC. And the draft is always, it's always so focused on the first round for the obvious reason. That's where everyone's attention is. But it's a three-day festival, and it's a lot of fun to watch a city and a region, because a lot of people will come flooding into Detroit for this to make it interesting.
It's coming up fast, Kai. Coming up fast.
It'll
we'll be here before you know it.
Before we know it, John.
Right.
Somehow you didn't want to go to Detroit.
There's nothing for.
We did spend a week there.
There's nothing for me in Detroit.
Listen, we spent a week there last.
I'm not even
I burned all my bridges there.
These days, I'm not even sure there's anything for me in Detroit, to be honest with you, because in recent years, Anton Harrison wasn't in Kansas City, right? And
sure.
and Trayvon
We're gonna
Walker.
Break the streak.
Right.
Break the streak. Maybe someone will be there.
Trayvon Walker was not in Vegas, but Devin Lloyd was. But the year before that, neither ETN nor Trevor were in Cleveland. So
maybe they knew you were going to be there.
Yeah, I'm sure that's it. what's happened is that players have decided that they'd rather do their own parties and stay home. And we get a list of, you know, 10, 12, 14 players that are going, and it's just not as impactful as it was when – you know, I'm standing there waiting for Jalen Ramsey to come up, right? Or Dante Fowler, or whoever the Jags drafted.
Or Josh Allen.
Oh, Josh Allen in 2019 is one of my favorite stories. That was the day that Tyreek Hill had a story about him and his son who had broken his arm, and there was domestic issues in the home. And I walked into the green room to grab Josh just as he was walking down the hallway to the stage, and he had Wesley, now his oldest, who was an infant, in his arms. And you could see the smile from the wings on Roger Goodell's face as here comes Josh Allen with his son in his arms. And the story about Tyreek went away, and it was about Josh Allen, football player, husband, father. It was a great moment.
Josh Allen, the football player, we love him. Hopefully many more years to come. We're still working on that extension. We'll keep an eye on that, as we always do. Stay with us for the next couple of weeks. We're gonna have all your draft coverage for you. There will be a draft event here on draft night as well, so consider that. We'll see you next week on Jags AM.